Hi, I'm Gail.
And hi, I'm Catherine. Welcome to Women Over 70 Aging Reimagined, our award-winning weekly podcast. Please visit womenover70.com and consider joining Aging Reimagined Circle, our sustaining membership fund, so we may continue to inspire women to age with curiosity, courage, and creativity. Members enjoy monthly programming and probing discussions on issues that matter to women. And we hope to see you virtually on Zoom.
Eitsakani, 72, was a career banker for 45 years who focused on asset-based lending for companies all over the world. She retired with a 30-year plan. Long COVID interrupted that plan, exacerbating her rheumatoid arthritis. Still, that did not slow Kate down. With a coaching certificate for runners, an interest in music and ham radio, Kate is reinventing herself and how she sees the world. Kate, welcome to Women Over 70 Aging Reimagined.
Thank you.
You told me that you were a jogger and you ran marathons. You ran the Boston Marathon twice. So we want you to share how you got into running and what it's meant in your life.
It has had a huge positive impact my entire life. And that's one of the best moves I ever made for myself. Someone told me when I was 14 years old, in order to lead a healthy life, I had to exercise daily. And that's when I started. And of course, when you're 14 years old, and that meant Jack LaLanne type calisthenics at that point in time. And I continued that off and on through high school, college. And then when I got to work again, my MBA, I realized I was totally focused in the chair all the time. And I really needed to move. So starting in January 3rd, 1976, I took up jogging, which was the latest craze at the time. Mm-hmm. And they didn't make running shoes for women. But there were a couple of barefoot runners, and Indiana University had this great indoor facility for the students. So I was running indoors for the first 3 months barefoot.
Wow.
And I discovered I liked it. It was a nice contrast to sitting in the chair. And then when I wanted to move outdoors, I went to a athletic store. And they sold me a pair of men's shoes because they didn't make women's shoes. And I continued to run. And I was basically a 3 mile a day jogger, using modern dance from time to time as additional exercise, entry level. And then when I joined LaSalle Bank in 1998, they were the sponsor at that time of the Chicago Marathon. They were paying bankers to, they were paying entry fee and training for any of their bankers who wanted to do it. And I thought, well, it would be a nice community way of meeting more people in the bank and I'll run one. But the training plan said that if you're at mile 25 and you start planning on how you're going to do your next one, you're hooked. And that was me. I had about 25. I caught myself telling myself, the next time you do this, you're going to do this and this and this instead. And I just became very enthusiastic, not just about running marathons, but about racing. And I started racing a lot. And that changed very much how I approached running and how much I was doing it. Got me very involved in the running community. And I frankly, when I retired, I had a list of several things I wanted to accomplish, but running really didn't figure into that. And I kind of backed into getting involved with coaching. Someone mentioned this coaching program. So I ended up getting a coaching certificate, which helped me immensely personally as a runner. And using that information, I was able to time qualify for the Boston Marathon. For people who are listening who know nothing about running, Boston is the only marathon that you have to time qualify for. You have to run at a minimum pace, and it's measured by 5-year increments by sex. So, for example, that's how you compete in running. So I am not competing when I go race. against a 30-year-old guy. I'm competing against other women aged 70 to 74 or 75 to 79. So I was able to qualify for Boston, and that's how I ran Boston twice. It's a real coup as a runner. The Boston takes roughly statistically 10%, the top 10% of all runners. So to be able to say that you're Boston qualified, or BQ in the slang, and you've run Boston is a big deal.
What's the time that you have to be able to run in order to be qualified?
At age 70 to 74, 4 hours and 50 minutes, which equates to a 11 minute pace per mile. But really, you need to run it a bit faster than that. I ran my qualifying race at 10:47. These races are never quite, the courses are measured quite exactly. My Garmin watch actually said I ran 26.7 miles, not 26.2. So my actual pace was 10 minutes, 34 seconds mile.
When's the last time you ran a race? You ran a marathon. When did you do the marathons?
April. Yeah. And then I've been taking the rest of the year off because that was a huge effort. But also, as you indicated, long COVID, I got COVID 2 days after I ran my first Boston Marathon in 2021. Mm. And 30 days later, I started having other symptoms that turned into long COVID. But you know what? Before I go down that road, let me tie up and comment to everyone listening. If you are not a runner, or you think, I'm too old, I'm never going to do this, or I have all these problems, never rule out running for something to get into at this age. There have been a gazillion studies done on runners in the last 20 years that have been released that have been mind-boggling to the health community, because they've discovered running more than any other sport helps all over. Not just losing weight or keeping your weight down, but runners as a population have been shown to have lower cholesterol, lower rates of every form of cancer, lower Alzheimer's risk, lower diabetes. I've worked with runners my age who started out with high blood pressure, taking medication for high blood pressure, for diabetes, for cholesterol. And 2 years later, they're taking no medications whatsoever.
No. How about 82? Is that too old to start running?
Heck no. We do have some. Our older runners have been running for a while, but the oldest competitive person in my running club who shows up at a regularly races is 85 or 86. And there are three guys that show up in the Chicago area runners circuit who have been competing against each other since high school. And they're in the early 90s. But within the last year, based on pressure from the running community, has added an age group of 100 years and over older. They measure us by 5-year age group. So they used to have an 80 and over, and people started complaining, I don't want to compete against an 80-year-old when I'm 85. They added the 85, they added the 90, they just added the 100.
That's great.
Few people out there, yeah. And there are marathoners, they don't run fast, but there are a few marathoners in that age group.
Uh-huh. Catherine, were you going to say something?
No, I was just thinking that there's still hope for us, Kim.
Yes.
Absolutely. I would encourage it, because running, it's not even walking, but running more than walking creates all these benefits. And the old saw about, oh, you're going to ruin your knees. Stanford did a study that has been repeated successfully several times since then. And they released results about 20 years ago. Runners actually have better knees than the average population, because we have lower weight. And that's the number one issue for knee problems, is weight on the knees. And also, because we get so much exercise, the tendons and ligaments to hold the kneecap in place and runners are stronger than the average population. That helps keep your knees aligned and, and creates less orthopedic issues.
I was a jogger for many, many, many years, and I loved it. I just loved it. So who says I can't get back to it?
Yep. And if you haven't done it for a long time, shoe design have helped immensely for people who thought they couldn't run. Getting into the right shoe for your foot, it's extremely important. Some people who started running and immediately had knee problems may have bought the wrong shoe.
Okay.
So you want to go to a running store that specializes in running shoes and not buy whatever's on sale off the Kohl's rack.
Right. Okay. Let's hear about how long COVID intercepted your life.
And here's where running helped me. So 30 days after I got COVID, and COVID was, in fact, a little cold for me. I got over it quickly. I took Paxlovid, no problem. I started having symptoms. I have had rheumatoid arthritis for the past 12 years. It was well controlled, like a lot of people. I just had it in my hand, my fingers and wrists. And for people listening who don't have rheumatoid arthritis, about 80% of the sufferers are women, and it's typically in your hands and wrists. And that was my issue. I didn't have a problem. Once I controlled it, it wasn't interfering with my life. And then I got long COVID, and I started having symptoms in about, I had it in the beginning of May, COVID in the beginning of May. 30 days later, I ran a half marathon and came in second in my age group. I ran a 10 miler, no problems. And then I started having more symptoms. And by the middle of July, I couldn't move. What long COVID did was it attacked every joint in my body. Mm-hmm. It blew up every joint. My hands swelled. Every joint, I looked like I'd gone 10 rounds with Muhammad Ali. And the pain was off the chart. There was no painkiller I could take that gave me any kind of relief. And I turned into what I called a pain zombie. I was so deprived of sleep, I just kind of staggered around. And unfortunately, at the same time, my rheumatologist instantly retired, and I had trouble replacing him. So it wasn't until March of this year I found another doctor who, like me, didn't take no for an answer, and put me on some new drugs that have helped immensely. But I would encourage anybody out there who's been through this process. Networking is important to find other people with these problems. And also, you don't take no for an answer. The first rheumatologist I found who replaced my retired doctor was a young woman who listened to my tale of woe and said, "Well, honey, you're 71, deal with it." And you know, I just wanted to flat sigh in the face. That's an outstarter. So then where running helped is it motivated me to keep going through the pain. But also runners tend to be a very highly educated group. It attracts an interesting cross section of people. And we had another guy who got there's about a half dozen runners who are having long COVID problems and talking to each other and sharing information. There's a guy who got the original long COVID in Italy in February of 2020. And of course, he got the full brunt of it, and there was no information out there. And what he found and relayed to me, and this is exactly my experience, long COVID sets in about 30 days after you have your test negative for your initial COVID problem. It attacks whatever is your particular weakness. So for me, it blew up my rheumatoid arthritis. For him, who is now 60, he's had a lifetime of sinus problems, bronchitis, that sort of thing that he's always fought. And it completely blew up his sinuses. Every time he tries to go out for a run, his sinuses blow up. He can't breathe, and he spends a week in bed. So when you're used to doing, if you are a person who loves to do half marathon or marathon distance, this is very depressing. We have another lady who's a triathlete, and she has horrible dizzy spells. She can go fine for a couple of months, and then all of a sudden, she has a massive dizzy spell. And I literally had to call another runner and get a car and come pick her up. She was laying in the middle of the sidewalk with me on her run. The room was rocking that bad. So she can't train for triathlons anymore because she's afraid to get in the water. You know, we can all see and help her out when she has a dizzy spell on land. Water's a different issue. So some of the issues we're all dealing with. Don't take no for an answer.
Kate, I'm really interested in your enthusiasm for ham radio. I kind of know what it is, but I don't really know what it is.
Okay. It is, there are various forms of radio. Some people may be familiar with what's called family radio, which is you get a walkie-talkie in the house so you can tell if your baby's crying in the bedroom or to communicate between floors. There's another short version of radio that you could use around your community for community events. Amateur radio or ham radio is licensed by the FCC. And the primary entrants in the hobby tend to be ex-military people that were in the Signal Corps for one of the armed services. And that's what my father did. I didn't realize when I was growing up, and I ultimately nicknamed him the original geek, because in his era, he was born in 1917, radio was this brand new scientific thing, and he considered the neighborhood genius if you understood radio and could build this stuff. And if you didn't build your own radio, you didn't listen to anything. That was the first, you know, and all these teenage boys are running around with the Scientific American magazine in one hand and radios in the other. So radar was brand new during World War II. And he ended up being drafted by the Army and sucked into their Signal Corps because he understood all this and built it. And he ended up installing radar, which was a brand new invention, in bombers during World War II. You know, it was one thing to invent radar. It was another thing to put it in a plane. But when he was doing it, and I was watching him build his own radios, he tried to teach my brother, and my brother couldn't learn Morse code. I couldn't figure it out. And I picked it up standing at the door listening to them go back and forth, frustrated the daylights out of my brother. But my father kept saying, "Girls, don't do this," and he would throw me out of his workshop. And periodically, I'd show up at his door, "Daddy, can I?" "Girls, don't do this." So on my list of things to do for my 30-year plan when I retired was to do some things that I had been denied as a girl or a young woman, or get farther into doing what I was doing. I ended up in it and went into adulthood thinking, this is something I will never do. And showed up to volunteer at a running event. And there were two ham radio operators there and who introduced themselves and tried to explain what it was. And I said, "Oh, I know all about it. My father does this." And they said, "Well, why aren't you a ham?" And I said, "Do girls do this?" So they had classes. I learned how. I got my first level license. There's three levels of licenses. And I got my first license, probably showed it to my father. He was tickled pink, went out and bought my first radio. And then I got my second level license. And he got mad because I was serious. And it was supposed to be serious. But I'm aware this isn't answering your question. What is ham radio? It's a method of communication for amateurs, not involved in the military. It's a hobby for people who just want to talk to each other, and also for people who are interested in building electronic equipment or operating electronic equipment. And the same way I contest when I go out and run races, amateur radio operators have contests on how far can I send my signal? Can I get to the other side of Illinois? Can I get to Iowa? Can I get to Miami? Can I get to London? And the gold standard is, can I get to the other side of the world? And that takes a lot of know-how, a lot of electronic know-how, a lot of understanding, because it isn't just about building this box. And that's primarily what I'm interested in, the geeky part of how it all fits together. But understanding radio waves, understanding and how you can make your signal go so much farther if you understand atmospheric waves and how to use the current atmosphere and how to bounce a signal off a satellite. When you get the third level license, there's a lot of very high powered math. I'm going to have to go sit down and relearn high school trigonometry and some math courses in order to be able to sit for that license. So I like it because it's a science that I personally denied myself because girls don't do this. And I want to go back and revisit that and say, okay, I'm tying this off. It's a loop I need to close that's left from my childhood that I really want to be able to prove myself. Yeah, science has not denied me. Math has not denied me. And I'm using it all in body.
What else have you put on your, this is on your list?
It also fits into actually running because ham radio operators are the backbone of disasters. We are the only method of communication that if you have a Hurricane Katrina and your cell towers go down, we don't need cell towers or cell phones or any other means of getting a signal and distress calls from one place to another because we have our own equipment, our own radios, and our own power source. We have to demonstrate, if you're part of this emergency corps, that we can operate for 36 or 48 hours without plugging in. Mm-hmm. And the FCC discovered that, realized how important we are to disaster situations when ham radio operators showed up uninvited, unannounced, down at Hurricane Katrina, set up shop, and started operating out of hospitals. Because even fire departments and police departments couldn't communicate with each other because they were on different systems. But we could always communicate with each other. So it fits into running because there are guys in cars that sit in their jalopies with their radios and do this. But if you really have a disaster situation where trees are down and you've got debris everywhere, you need somebody to be able to run and get into an area with a handheld radio on foot, who can radio out and say, we have stranded people here under this house. We need ambulances here. We need water and food over here. And a ham radio operator on a handheld can do that. Runners. I could run 26.2 miles. And unfortunately, your average ham radio operator is a retired military guy, and they tend to be very sedentary.
So, what, Catherine, you were going to ask a question.
I was wondering, what else is on your list that you didn't get to do when you were a girl?
Well, the music portion of it, I want to relearn a little bit I knew about music. I've always been loved playing an instrument or the idea of playing an instrument. It was something that I got thwarted on after 5 years of lessons. I wanted to get back to that. I haven't been able to get to it yet because other things keep popping up. Running the Boston Marathon wasn't on my list, and that was a huge time suck. But I've identified where I want to take lessons, but I haven't figured out yet what instrument I want to take up.
I wanted to know. Yeah.
So music is definitely on my list. I'm starting to, like everybody does traveling, but my list, and Spanish, I've never been fluent in a language, and I decided that I wanted to be fluent in Spanish in 5 years. I think it's going to take 10. I've been told if I want to be fluent, I need to go take an immersion course and go to Spain or Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And the purpose of that is, as a Chicago resident, a third of our population speaks Spanish. And just try, on one part of me, I would like just like to learn a foreign language, but it's extremely useful in Chicago. I had taken German undergraduate, which fit into my psychology major at the time, but there was no place to practice German. And Spanish in Chicago, I can practice everywhere. So the primary purpose is to meet, and be able to talk to, mis vecinos nuevos, my new neighbors, on the L or wherever I encounter them. So I'm 5 years into that. I'm pretty comfortable. I'm very comfortable reading it at this point and writing it. But I have found that with an old age hearing loss, I don't hear sometimes so well in English, let alone in Spanish. And that is getting difficult for me to pick up. I'm going to have to spend a lot of time working on that.
Go ahead, Catherine.
No, go ahead.
So, Kate, this is all fascinating, and I can only imagine what a force you were when you actually worked in your field, because you're such a planner and you have such perseverance and interest in what it is that you're doing. So, do you think at all about your own aging?
Yes, I can, especially this last 18 months when I've been battling this long COVID, because before that, I took care of each of my parents through the aging process when they went fragile, as they became fragile. My father used to tell me, "Don't get old," and I would retort, "It beats the alternative." I'm beginning to understand more and more what he meant. On the other hand, as I keep reminding myself, it still beats the alternative. Yes, I think about it. It's not fun, especially when, you know, the first 10 minutes of the morning when I get out of bed and I'm dealing with all my aches and pains. I'm very stiff and it's frustrating. It's also frustrating now because I used to run 10.5 minute miles. And now thanks to COVID, I can only run 14 minute miles. And it's been a huge battle trying to get back to the distance. And I really miss distance runs and at a faster pace. That is part of the aging process that is tough for me to wrap my head around. But I keep reminding myself, because I've certainly buried my share of friends, it's a privilege to be this old. Even 70 may be considered a young old. It's still a privilege. I've buried enough people to know that just getting here is a privilege, and I cannot take it lightly and or abuse it. So that is a huge motivating factor for me to keep running, for me to keep seeking out how to treat myself kinder to so I can continue to do what I want to do. And one of my big motivations is I do not want to be a prisoner in my own body, because I have so many friends. One of the challenges of aging right now is I'm running out of people to play with, because people have trouble moving. They can't walk distances. I just came back from a tour of D-Day in France, and my brother was on the trip, but we had several people, including my brother, who couldn't do the second half of the trip because of aching back or whatever their needs or whatever their issue was, and they just couldn't make it over that through that kind of terrain or do some of the physical parts of the tour. There was a lot of stair climbing, and that is a constant motivator to me. I want to continue to be able to do those kinds of things, and I do not want to be trapped in my body.
Wow, said. That's wonderful that you feel that way, and from what I know of you, you definitely are going to keep at it for a long, long time.
And I would encourage anybody out there, even if you think, well, it's too late for me. No, it is not too late for you. I do work with people as an unpaid volunteer who need that motivation, or how do I go about doing this to get people started on that road.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Kate.
You're very welcome. Right.
And listeners, thank you for your loyalty. Because of you, our numbers are growing all across the country and overseas, and this is a good thing. But still, we need more subscribers and reviews on Apple Play and YouTube. So please support Women Over 70 and let your voice be heard and help us change the conversation about women aging. Good idea.